A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday. Thanks for waking up with us. And according to the weather reports, it's going to be a perfect weekend for Art Prize. Mm-hmm. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. And it is true, according to that weatherman, we are going to have a Goldilocks kind of weekend. And that means it is going to be just right.
Just right.
Just
right. Really, really corny. Anyway, for those of you who are looking for that Goldilocks paint color.
Yeah.
And hoping corny. To win. Yeah, that's a little corny too. And hoping to win a fan deck. Mm-hmm. As we referenced last week, we have a contest. We're giving away five fan decks and yep. five $25 gift certificates to Repco Light or Port City Paints.
Mm-hmm.
We have some winners, and we're going to tell you who they are at the end of the show, so you're going to have to hang around till the end.
Right. But before we do that, we've got a decorating solution for that tiny bedroom in your home, and it does not include just closing the door, walking away, and forgetting about it.
We're also going to talk about trimming trees and plants. Now, I know that I always trim the wrong thing mm-hmm. at the wrong time of year mm-hmm. with disastrous results. Sometimes yes. hilarious results, but generally, they're always disastrous.
Right.
Now, to help us with this, we're joined in the studio by Matt Baker from Landscape Design Services, and he's going to tell us what we should and shouldn't be trimming this time of year.
I have that exact same problem. I always trim stuff at the wrong time.
I'm betting a lot of people do.
Yes.
I'm hoping so. Otherwise, it's not going to really benefit anybody except us.
Right. Well, I also have a problem with my light bulbs, and I'm thinking that other people might have the same thing. They burn out way faster than I think that they should. Luckily, we have Bill Havman from Havman Electric stopping by, and I think he's going to tell me exactly what is going on.
Well, I hope so, because I've got that problem, too. So whether anybody else has any of these problems,
our problems are
at
solved.
At least we're going to enjoy this episode, because we're going to get some solutions.
Yeah.
I just hope they're good solutions.
I hope so, too.
I don't want them to be expensive.
News.
That's, I guess, what I mean.
Yes.
Anyway, before we get to solving all of our problems, we want to solve an actual problem that we know other people have,
mm-hmm.
because we see it at Repco Light in the store all the time. And I guess I should say it's not really a problem. It's more just confusion
right.
that's out there. See, we get lots of questions about which wood finish is best. You know, when people are staining and refinishing, maybe they're doing a kitchen table. Maybe they're doing a floor. Maybe mm-hmm. they're doing, you know, some cabinets. The question comes up, what do I put on them? What's the best thing to use?
Right.
And that's what we want to talk about today. We want to clear up some of that confusion. And let's start with the most common of all of them, the one that we've probably all heard about.
Mm-hmm.
It's polyurethane.
Yes.
It's the easiest of all of these wood finishes to use mm-hmm. and still get great results with.
Right.
It comes in a number of different finishes, and there's also an oil-based and a waterborne version.
Right. The waterborne poly offers you a quick dry time, which is what a lot of people are drawn to. It's also low odor, so it doesn't have that smell of a traditional oil, and it's soap and water cleanup, which is nice. So you don't have to go and buy extra mineral spirits that you'll never use again just to clean out your brush and your tools. So that's great. It also stays clear when it's dry, so you don't have that yellow ambering kind of thing happening.
Right. They're ideal. Waterborne polyurethanes are ideal for working in an area that's occupied.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're working in an office area and everybody's there and you can't make them leave.
Right.
That's a perfect product to choose. Or maybe if you're working in your home and your wife is like mine
mm-hmm.
and she's super sensitive to smells.
Right.
This would be another great option. It still has a smell, but it's definitely reduced, you know, from that of an oil-based product.
Right, yep.
It's also great if you're working when, you know, with a time issue. I've
yes.
got to have this stuff done. I've got to move on it fast. I need mm-hmm. to get multiple coats on it in a single day. A waterborne polyurethane is going to give you that option. And
right.
finally, another great use, or where we see it used a lot, are with situations where people don't want to see the wood yellow over time.
Right.
It will stay white longer, like I believe you mentioned earlier.
Right.
It does yellow slightly.
Yes.
But it's not going to yellow like an oil-based wood.
Right. It is as durable as an oil, which
is really important to stress, because a lot of people are under the impression that a waterborne poly is
right.
somehow you're making concessions with durability.
Yes.
You're not. It's as durable as an oil.
Right. The only difference is it's a slower build than an oil. This is because it has lower solids than the typical oil-based product does.
Now that sounds like crazy, you know, paint chemical talk. So it's, explain what solids
it's
are.
The it's the science segment.
It's very simple.
It's very simple. The solids are what's left behind when the solvents evaporate out of the product. So the lower the solids means that there's less material on the surface, and that usually means at least one extra coat, possibly two. So with the waterborne polyurethane, you're going to have to do at least one extra coat of it.
Right. Now, an oil-based poly, let's just switch gears to that, is pretty much the easiest product out there to use.
Yes.
Even easier than the water-based, and that's because it dries so much slower. A lot of times we treat dry time as a negative. You know, a slow dry time is a negative in a product. And sometimes that's the case. If you're trying to hurry, of course it's a negative.
Right.
But when it comes to applying a product and getting a great look out of it and having it self-level and having brush strokes, you know, fade out of it, a slow dry time is better. And that's what the oil-based poly is going to give you. It's just easy to work with. An oil-based poly typically has higher solids than a waterborne, so it's going to give you a thicker build. So you're going to need fewer coats than you would with a waterborne product. Now, it does amber slightly.
Yes.
We mentioned that multiple times. It's important to understand that means it will yellow over time. It will richen the color of the wood. And that's how I look at it. A lot of people, again, see that as a negative.
Right.
For me personally, I like the look. I like the fact that it richens over time. It just gives depth and tone to the wood. I don't particularly like the look of a waterborne poly. It's just too clear.
Yep. This is an ideal product for people who have a little bit less experience applying a finish. That extra working time is really going to help you out. And it also helps to match up to older woodwork. If you have woodwork and you have to put in a new piece, you stain it, it's going to amber to look like your old woodwork.
So if you have quicker.
Exactly. So if you have woodwork that's 50 years old or older, you definitely want to use the oil-based poly on it.
Overall, polyurethanes are an incredibly durable finish. They're resistant to scuffing, to regular household chemicals, to water.
Yep.
They usually only wear off after a long period of time. So they really, really hold up. They're perfect for, you know, furniture in an office area or furniture that gets a ton of use at your home.
Right.
They're great for your woodwork, for doors, for cabinets, kitchen tables. Perfect for that. For a hardwood floor. Even a waterborne poly is perfect on a hardwood floor.
Right.
It'll hold up and give you years of wear. So it's a great product for any of those situations. In fact, I can't really think of an interior situation that you'd want to coat wood that a poly wouldn't be a great product for you.
Right. So now this leaves everyone out there asking, which one should they choose?
There's oil or waterborne.
Exactly. Well, this all depends on what exactly you need out of this product. Does the ambering of the oil bother you? Do you want it to stay clear? Is odor a concern for you? Can you not stand the smell of the oil staying in your home? Is dry time a consideration? Do you have to put this thing back into service quickly? And how experienced are you at applying finishes? Because that oil is going to give you more time to play with it. It's going to be a little bit more forgiving than that water-based one is.
Right. Just come into any Repco Light or Port City paint store. Show us what you're working on, and we'll help you figure out what's best.
We're talking about wood finishes on the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, and we just covered polyurethane, which is probably the most common wood finish out there. Everyone's heard about it. But we get a fair amount of people who ask about lacquers. It's amazing how many people come in, and they think that lacquer is just an overarching term.
Right.
It's kind of like polyurethane.
Any kind of finish is a lacquer. That's not the case.
Right. There are so many different variables for lacquer. But we're going to just give you a very simplistic overview. It's usually used in the furniture industry. Sometimes it's used on cabinets. It builds and dries very quickly. It's a sprayed finish for the most part. And that's why it's so smooth when you look at it. It looks like glass.
It's a very tough look to beat. You know, it looks beautiful.
Yep.
But the problem is touching up.
Right. It's very tough to touch up lacquer. You're going to see that little touch-up spot. And when you have cabinets done, they're not going to give you lacquer to touch it up, they're going to give you paint. So there's always going to be a little bit of a difference. So just be aware of that if you're having someone use lacquer for you.
So why does lacquer get used? I guess you'd say it's the quick dry time and recoat time.
Right.
However, in order to do that, what homeowners don't often realize is that they need specialized equipment.
Yes.
It's not just something anybody can use. You need sprayers, you need respirators, you need great ventilation. It's not a homeowner project or product. It's not something that you can typically use. We bring it up just because people are confused about it. They come in thinking that's what they need, when really what they're looking for is most likely a polyurethane.
Exactly.
So if you do need a lacquer for very small projects, there are spray cans available. So you can get those, and you can get them in a number of different finishes, but you still need to make sure you've got great ventilation and respirators and things like that in order to use them safely.
Right. One last product we want to talk quickly about is shellac, because people have heard of it, but they don't really know anything about it. It's actually a secretion secretion from the female lac bug that they mix with alcohol. And
that should tell you everything you need to know.
Right.
You are brushing on a secretion from a lac bug.
Yes. It's a natural product, which is nice. A lot of people like that. It's good for toys and utensils, things like that. But it is not durable. It is not a tough finish. So it's affected by heat, water, alcohol, humidity.
If you blink at it or use harsh tones,
yes,
it will do crazy things.
Yes, it will.
So you would never want to use this on a kitchen table.
Absolutely not.
Do not ever try to use this on a floor or cabinets or things like that. We only mention it because it's out there,
right?
And people sometimes think that that's what they want to use. It's an inferior finish, though, for almost anything. Mm-hmm. You're going to have typically better results with a poly unless there's some very specific reason that you need a shellac.
Right.
And that's all the time we've got to dig into this particular topic. And we know we're just scratching the surface here. There are a ton of other products out there that you could use, and they each have a specific purpose or use. Whatever you're doing, we can help you find the right one for you. So just stop out at any Repco Light or Port City Paint store, and we'll help you figure it out.
Exactly. After a quick break, we're going to talk electricity and light bulbs, and it's way more fun than it sounds. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
And welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging with us through the break. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Now, I have some electrical issues in my house, or at least what I think are some electrical issues. So I've called Bill Hovman from Hovman Electric to come in, and hopefully we can bounce some questions off of him and get some answers, because I'm guessing that our listeners have many of the same questions
Probably.
That I've got.
They're pretty common.
Right. Bill, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so light bulbs in my house burn out way faster than they're supposed to. You know, they all have that rating on them that says, oh, it's going to last you 10 or 15 years. And I think about 3 months in, it's burned out and
I
have to replace it.
I buy expensive ones too.
Yes.
Thinking, okay, this is going to last. It says 20 some years.
Right.
And I get like 3 weeks. It's already out.
That's what I'm talking about. What is going on?
That happens, and mostly with the older incandescent lamp.
Okay.
There's a few things that can be a problem.
Mm-hmm. An
average life of a lamp means that half of your light bulbs are going to burn out. So some of them are going to burn out early.
Okay.
Those apparently are the only ones I buy.
Yes.
It's
yeah.
just the early burnouts. It's like my life.
there are some strange problems that can happen. You can have a high voltage. That can happen. One thing you can do is put a dimmer in.
Okay.
And rule of thumb says that if you dim a light bulb 10%, you will double the life of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that can help quite often. I've seen light bulbs near a door that slams frequently and shakes that lamp, and they will burn out. I've seen fixtures that are starting to go bad. They start to heat up, and that's typically
the light fixture itself is starting to go bad?
Yes. A socket goes bad, and that lamp is loose in that socket, causing it to heat up. And you can also heat up by having too large a lamp in that fixture, and that will cause that bulb mm-hmm. to burn out quicker.
So when they say put a 60-watt bulb in there,
they mean it.
They mean it.
Yes.
That's
somebody that I know
there.
At my house, me.
I was going to say, must be
I
you.
I didn't have the right bulb, so I put the other one in.
Mm-hmm.
How dangerous is that? Am I just burning out a light bulb sooner, or am I potentially creating a dangerous
scenario?
You're
creating the heat in that fixture, and that socket is built for that 60-watt and no more. You get insulation on top of that fixture, you contain that heat, and you can have a serious problem.
Okay, so I've only done that once or twice, and that was a long time ago when I was much dumber.
Right, I'm sure it was like a couple weeks ago.
So, no. So, you said incandescent bulbs. Now, those are becoming rarer and rarer.
They are.
And I know the bulbs I'm buying aren't incandescent bulbs. They're halogens or they're
LEDs.
Even LEDs.
Yeah, and that's the ultimate solution right now, LEDs. They've become mainstream. They're excellent. The color of light is good. The expectation of life and qualities are good.
What if I'm still getting those burning out? What do you think that, I mean, am I talking I've got an actual electrical problem at this point?
You might. you might. And I would check that voltage. That voltage may be high. And
is that something I can do? Is that
probably
something?
Probably not.
Oh.
Probably not.
Is this something that anybody else at home could do? This isn't just a me problem?
Probably not.
Okay. Okay.
You'd probably want someone to check on that.
All right. And that's something you guys could come out and do?
We certainly can.
We're in the studio with Bill Hovman from Hovman Electric on the Repco Light Home Improvement Show. And Dan is getting all of his questions answered.
I'm hogging the space.
Yeah.
Hogging the air.
Yeah, I'm used to it.
Sorry, Betsy.
That's okay. Now, I have a question. I have a dimmer in my dining room, and I don't know if it doesn't work properly. The lights will come up, and then all of a sudden, they'll dim, or it won't get as bright. You know, the little switch is all the way up, and it's not nearly as bright as it should be. It's kind of hit or miss. Is there a certain light bulb that goes with a dimmer that maybe I'm not getting, or...
Yes, yes, there is. Most dimmers nowadays are coming compatible with LED or any other lamp.
Okay.
The old ones were not compatible, and you will have problems.
Oh.
They'll only dim down to, let's say, 40%, and then you'll start to blink or they'll fluctuate.
I have that problem. That's
okay.
Exactly what happens.
So you need to update your dimmer.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, because right. I'm not sure. I don't remember how old that dimmer is.
Now, the dimmer in our kitchen, since we're talking about dimmers and since we're solving all of our problems, and I'm assuming other people have this, but I've noticed the dimmer switch, that whole where the plate is, gets very hot. What in the world? Is that normal?
That is. So you're taking that energy and changing it into heat rather than
being used to light the bulb.
To the light.
So that's not a problem. I quit using it.
Is that a fire hazard?
Yeah.
No, that is not a problem because those dimmers are rated to a certain wattage.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you don't put too many light bulbs on one dimmer. And there again, if you go to an LED lamp, that becomes less and less of a problem because you will not overload that dimmer.
So what he's telling us is we should just get all LED lights.
Well, LED lights seem to be a solution for a lot of different things. You know, because one of the things we noticed in our studio here, we had this track lighting system. People can't see it, but halogen light bulbs in that. And we baked all summer long in here. We just recently switched them to LED.
What
and it's
a difference.
Astonishing. Can hold my hand up there, and there's no heat generated.
It's 15 to 20 degrees cooler in here. I mean, there were some days we were up in the 100-degree range because those lights baked
us. It's amazing. I know I had a problem with some lights fixtures at home. We switched to LED.
Sure.
And definitely the heat generated is much less, hoping that the lights will last longer. That's my big thing right now.
That heat has been a big problem. I know of stores that reduce their air conditioning bills by just changing light bulbs, going from an incandescent old-style light bulb to an LED or a compact fluorescent, and made a large difference.
See, I would have thought that was just marketing hype until we literally did it here. And we had one fixture where I got part way and I didn't have – I thought there were five lights per fixture. And so I had one little outlet that still had the old halogen in it, and you could hold both hands up there, one on the LED – and one near the halogen, tremendous difference. So much hotter. Mm-hmm. So much more heat being generated.
Yeah, it was definitely surprising.
Definitely surprising what a big difference it made. Bill, that's all the time we've got for today. So if our listeners would like to get in touch with you, how do they best do that?
The best way is through our office at 396-8213.
You can also find Hovman Electric online at hovamanelectric.com, H-A-V-E-M-A-N, electric.com. Bill? Thanks so much for being here with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Just ahead, when's the right time of year to trim your trees? How about your flowering plants? And did you know that there's something you should do just minutes after you trim an oak tree? We're going to cover all of that and more when we come back. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repco-like Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost. On News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
And we're back. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson.
And I almost didn't come back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I've got literally, I think if I count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Do you need my toes to count too?
No. 6 working light bulbs in my house. Most light fixtures have one, maybe working one in it. The bathroom has four bulbs, one's lit. The kitchen has five bulbs and the track lighting, one is lit. It is remarkably dark in my house as evening sets in.
That's a problem because now it's dark way longer.
Right. So I almost left to go get bulbs, but I decided to stay because I know you can't carry this show on your own.
Oh, right. Of course. That's the problem.
That's pretty much, that's one of your problems.
Uh-huh.
Betsy can't carry the show on her own.
Right.
Dan Hansen. Did I say that already?
Yes, you did.
Apparently, I can't carry the show on my own. Let's just get to the guest. Who are we visiting with right now?
We're visiting with Matt Baker from Landscape Design Services because among many of your issues, landscaping, I happen to know,
memory
is one
of
them.
Memory is an issue. Light bulbs are an issue. Landscaping is a big issue.
I really
struggle with it.
I know.
I try to keep things alive.
Wait, a lot of people struggle with it, especially what Matt is going to talk about because he's going to talk about trimming, and I can never remember what you're supposed to trim at what time of year, because I know there are specifics. So, Matt, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So, can you give us a breakdown on what things you should be trimming this time of year, fall, and then winter, spring?
Certainly. I can try. There's always, there's always some specifics. But,
right.
First off, as a rule, dead or damaged or diseased branches, mm-hmm. prune those anytime.
Okay.
Because you want to just clean up the plant and get it out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Evergreen trees and shrubs, you can prune pretty much year round because we're not worried about losing flower blossoms or affecting the plant. So again, those can be year round. So you're looking at with that like hollies and junipers, yews. Or evergreen trees, anytime you can prune those.
Okay.
The flowering shrubs is where most of the questions come in.
Mm-hmm.
So the best rule of thumb that I have is to trim or prune them after they flower. So spring flowering shrubs, don't prune them early spring, but wait until summer. We do a lot of summer pruning for our clients.
And
we come in after the spring blossoms are done. And then clean those up, do some directive pruning with the plants. And
directive pruning.
Directive pruning,
I just wanted to say that. what does that mean?
So directive pruning, if you had a shrub or a tree that was near your house or a fence,
gotcha.
And you had a branch that's growing towards the house,
mm-hmm.
Pruning that back and away. The other thing you can do is... focus on, and this gets a little bit more detailed, but...
Do you think I can't handle it?
I'm just warning.
I don't think I can handle it.
I'm just warning you. So.
I can do it. Tell me. Lay it on
so,
me.
What you can do is you can trim a branch back to where a lateral or side branch is,
mm-hmm.
pointed in the right direction. And so you can trim it back, and then once you've got that leader off, now that side branch that you left will mm-hmm. grow, will take over as the dominant branch.
Okay. After we're done, will you draw a couple pictures? So I understand exactly.
So Matt had your number right away.
Oh, you could just tell by the way he looked at me that he thought, oh, he doesn't have a clue. Everything I trim, I kill. And I trim it in the wrong time. I mean, just right now, what you just said about the flowering... The blossoming things.
I think it's common.
I've done that wrong.
Right.
One of the biggest questions that we have is, why didn't my plants flower?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why didn't my lilacs flower or hydrangeas, notoriously, that's the question that we get. And there are a lot of improved hydrangeas that will flower on new wood,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of them like that older wood to flower off from. Hydrangeas, I think the challenge with them is that they look a lot like a herbaceous or a perennial plant that dies back to the ground
because mm-hmm.
they don't have a lot of woody structure. So people tend to just trim them off tight to the ground, and then that ruins the blossoms for the next year.
Someone looks very guilty.
They look like they're dead.
They do.
It looks like a bunch of brown sticks.
Yeah.
So I saw that this spring.
And you got out your shears.
I did. I got out the shears, and I thought, I am so excited to trim this down because I really wanted to use these shears,
uh-huh.
and nothing I had was really worth chopping apart. But that looked like a pile of dead, and I was just – something in my head said, just call your mother. She lives down the road. So I called Mom, And she comes over and looks at it and instantly takes the shears out of my hands and says, "You can't do that. You'll never have flowers there." So she was right.
There you go. Mom's right. Mom's always right.
So your mom is right. Your dad is right.
I know. Everybody's right except me.
You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, and we're talking about the perfect time to be trimming all of these things that are in your yard, because I know it's confusing for me certain times, certain things at certain times of the year. What other things should we be considering? I know that trees are a whole different ballgame and that there are a number of different things to consider, especially with certain species. So what's the deal with trees?
Yeah, oak trees in particular are becoming a challenge in the area. There's a prevalence there's examples of oak wilt, which is a condition that causes the normally healthy oak tree to die off fairly quickly. So you've got this great big old oak tree that declines and fails pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That disease is passed by insects, and the insects are attracted to the sap on the tree. So when you cut the oak tree branch in the summer, the sap gets exposed. The insects come in and deliver the pest, the disease. So you don't want to prune oak trees when insects are active. So I usually recommend, you know, at least November, if not December, January, and February being the best times to prune those.
Okay.
If you had a case where you had a broken branch, we've had some storms this summer, and you had a broken oak tree branch, and you do make a cut, then you want to pick up some pruning paint to cover that cut.
Okay.
And you'll want to buy the paint ahead of the cut because the insects get attracted really quickly.
That fast.
Yeah, that fast. So sometimes within minutes is what they say.
Oh, really?
So you want to make the cut and then paint it up and cover that up. So
and you can get that?
You could get that at your local garden center.
Okay.
Certainly. Yeah.
I clearly should not have any cutting equipment at home.
Clearly.
There is
you cut everything at the
I've
wrong
done
time.
Right yet. Yeah. Dang.
The other thing that's great in winter is that you can see the structure of the trees and shrubs because the leaves are gone. So now you can get in there. You can see crossover branches. You can do some more directive pruning. You can see branches that are heading the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a better handle on the plant. So winter is a great time if we get a clear day to get out there with your hand pruners and, you know, probably not the power shears necessarily unless you're qualified for that.
But. Oh, clearly I'm not. I can tell.
He does not have certification for those, I guarantee it.
No, every guest who we interview, it takes about 2 minutes to figure out that I really need to be watched.
Matt, do you offer a class that Dan can take to use his power shears?
Or do
we? We can help him out.
So we
have professionals that can certainly help him out. So we could take care of it for you.
Looks like you're hiring Matt to do your pruning from now on.
Maybe I'll just learn from this. That's the whole point. I know paint stuff back and forth.
I don't.
This is out there for me. I've not had good experiences.
Yes.
I wasn't raised right. No, Mom knows. I just didn't pay attention.
Right. There you go.
All right. So, Matt, if our listeners want to get in touch with you for anything, help with maintenance around the yard like this or any of the other things you do, maybe an outdoor kitchen, although it's getting a little bit late in the season for that, maybe make some planning for next year, how do they best get in touch with you?
You can find us online at landscapeds.com or search us out on Facebook. And we've got at our website, we've got a ton of ideas and pictures. So you can take a look at a lot of the work we do is visual. So you can see pictures and examples of projects we've done, and you can borrow from those if you're a do-it-yourselfer or if something is appealing to you, give us a call.
All right. Excellent. Matt Baker from Landscape Design Services, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Now, coming up after the break, do you have a tiny bedroom that it's easier to just close the door on than actually try to decorate? We've got some solutions for you when we come back. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore.
Well, welcome back, everybody. And we'll be giving you the names of the winners of our $25 gift certificate and Affinity Fan Deck at the end of this segment. So we're almost there.
We're just hanging with
us a little longer. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Now, when it comes to decorating small bedrooms, a lot of people really don't have any idea what to do. It's a frustrating experience, and it seems really complicated to people. But the good news is, it's not. You just have to get a little bit creative, and you have to do some problem solving when it comes to fitting everything into a small space. So today, we have four concepts that we think are going to help you get a little bit more out of your small bedroom space.
Right. And the first concept is very simple. Prioritize. Mm-hmm. You know, you may think that you've pared things down in that room and that everything that's there is absolutely essential to that room
right.
and can't possibly be left out. Think again. Look at it one more time and be ruthless.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that whatever you keep in that room absolutely, truly needs to be there. Maybe there's a space down the hall. Maybe there's another solution to get some of these things out of that room and open up some space. So prioritize. That's
right.
the first one.
The second concept is to look up and utilize that vertical space that's in a room. So often we just have everything on the floor.
And then we put cobwebs up in the corners. That's
right.
what I use in the upper parts of the room.
Yeah, me too.
You're saying more than just cobwebs.
I'm saying more than just cobwebs.
What?
Well, the biggest thing in a room that takes up the most real estate is obviously the bed. So get it up off the floor. Loft that bed. Kids love having a lofted bed. I had one in college. I know you had one. It's a great use of that space up there.
It just frees up that space underneath.
Mm-hmm.
You could use it as a desk. That's what I ended up doing. I had no place to do homework or anything like that growing up
right.
until we did this. All
yep.
of a sudden, I had a place for a little computer,
mm-hmm.
a place to write, a place to read, books. I had shelves. It was amazing how much that opened up. So definitely go up with the bed. That's one great way to go. And another thing you could do is if you don't want to do that, because not everybody wants to put a loft bed up, maybe this is a guest room that you're using and you
yeah.
don't want to make your guests climb up there. You know, I don't need
my
mother-in-law climbing a ladder to get to the bed. That's probably not the nicest way to go.
Because no.
I don't want to hear, like you said, the thud in the middle of the night.
And then the ambulance that has to come
it's
too.
It's so hard to sleep through an ambulance
I know.
At your house.
And then you feel bad because she broke her hip.
Well, and I feel bad because I didn't get a full night to sleep because
right.
you know I need 8 hours
yes.
to look like this. So if you
right.
don't want to do the loft bed, what could you do? You could do the whole wall where the headboard is, fill that whole wall in with shelving.
Yeah, it does dual purpose. It makes a focal point in the room, which makes the room seem just a little bit bigger,
mm-hmm.
but it's also great storage. You know, suddenly you don't have to have a bedside table that has a lamp and the alarm clock and things like that.
Well, and shelves.
Right.
It really simplifies everything.
Exactly.
It's
not
just,
so many pieces in
right,
there.
It's all reduced to one piece against one wall, and yet you've got way more storage than if you had a bunch of different shelves and,
exactly.
and bedside tables. You can put books,
yep.
your lamp, whatever you need, and it just looks really cool. Not a lot of rooms have that at the end. So you've got this tiny little room with this cool architectural piece.
Exactly.
It's a win.
Right. We have some ideas for this on our Pinterest page. You should go there and check them out just to at least get some ideas of what is possible in a small room. One last idea here for using that vertical space is to get the lamps up off the floor and off of the tables and put up wall sconces or some sort of wall lighting that just creates more open floor space for you.
Well, and it gives you that alternate lighting source. So your only light isn't that harsh overhead
yes because those are always terrible.
Well, it's not very fun at night.
No
because everybody outside can see you.
Yes.
It's just not soft at all.
No.
We're talking about tiny spaces, tiny bedrooms, and four concepts that will help you redecorate or revitalize that space. We've gone
right.
through the first two. The third one that we want to focus on is to get creative with space saving ideas. And the first one that we want to highlight, the
mm-hmm.
first project within this, is really pretty basic, but it's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Is to get a platform bed. If you don't want to go up with the loft bed.
Right.
Another way to create some storage is to put that bed on a platform and create some storage area underneath it.
Right. I have one of these. It's fantastic. It has drawers on three sides that I can stash all kinds of stuff in. And you can even build a platform bed if you don't want to mm-hmm. actually buy one because, you know, they're not cheap, as no bed is cheap. So build one. We've got plans, again, on our Facebook page. Go and check them out. And if you don't want to build a platform bed, if you just want to have the bed that is already in the room, you can put storage underneath in the form of some dresser drawers. We're all about repurposing things around here. And if you put some casters on those drawers and slide them under the bed, it's a great way to store things and not have everything out where people can see it under the bed.
And it still looks cool.
Right.
That's the other side of it, is you don't want to come up with storage solutions that detract from the room. Come up with
right.
storage solutions that add to the design that you're trying to pull together.
Right. Another thing you can do is to bring in a day bed. Now, this is something that you can either buy or make yourself if you don't want to go and buy a new one.
Very easy to make yourself.
Right. You just take the bed that you already have and you throw some extra pillows and cushions and things like that on it. And instead of putting a headboard at one of the ends, you run it along the back side. And it just gives you a place to sit, not just sleep.
And that's what you gain with this. You create yep. a sitting area and a sleeping area all in one.
Mm-hmm.
So it frees up other space in the room. You can maybe get a chair out of the room at that point.
Yep.
And you've got a little more floor space to work with.
Exactly.
And one other very quick idea that I want to throw out there is the idea of a Murphy bed.
Yes.
Now,
I know
I like
you love this.
I know it's expensive and I know all of that. But if you have to buy a bed anyway mm-hmm. for the room, this might be an option. But a Murphy bed is basically a bed that folds up into a cabinet.
Yes.
So you could have your bed folded up and it looks like a cabinet on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a sitting area. You've got a desk.
Yep.
Whatever you need. And then when it's time to go to bed,
mm-hmm.
you just move some of these things out of the way, fold the bed down, and there you go. It's like magic.
It is like magic.
You do have to be careful that on all the old comedy shows...
Yes, people get folded up.
Yeah,
and
like Laurel and Hardy, they sit on there and
yeah.
then it gets slams against the wall and they're
yes.
stuck there. I don't think that really happens
a whole
lot. And
then all you hear are muffled screams.
Yeah. That's all right. It's easy to sleep through that.
Right. Now, the fourth concept that we want to give to you is to create the illusion of space. You've already created the space with all the space-saving ideas. Now you're just going to pretend like there's space
right.
there.
Right. You're going to trick people.
Exactly. Everyone's going to think you've got the space that you don't.
So you bring in a muralist and have them paint the back wall to look like it's extending for another
right. you know,
40 or 50 feet.
Well,
right?
There is a really good paint idea here, actually, because you can create the illusion of space by just painting the room white. It's light, it's airy, it automatically makes the room feel more open. So if you paint it Simply White by Benjamin Moore or White Dove mm-hmm. or any of their other number of whites, it's just going to make that room feel just a little bit bigger.
Right, but you don't leave it just white.
No.
Because that could be... boring.
Exactly. And we talk about this.
Right. We don't want that. And you can bring in lots of different colors.
Yes.
You know, well, different colors. We would recommend two mm-hmm. accent colors.
Yes.
But we'd recommend that they be brighter or lighter, clean colors.
Right. It's just going to bring a little bit of life and energy to the room, and it's going to keep it feeling light and airy. If you choose the more muted colors or earth tone colors, it just encloses the room a little bit more, makes it feel just a little bit tighter. And in a small space, you really don't want that.
It's all about color psychology here, you know,
yes.
and what colors do and how they play in our minds. And this really works. Using these colors will make the room feel bigger. And when we talk about lighter, brighter colors, we're not talking about necessarily face of the sun yellow
no.
and, you know, bright orange.
No.
It could be a sky blue color
mm-hmm.
and maybe a pale yellow.
Exactly.
Just something like that.
Yep. One other thing you can do is create a feature wall. This is just going to draw your eye down the room. You usually choose the...
Is this where we use the muralist?
Yes, you could use the muralist here. That's a great idea because you can use paint for this. You put it at the far end of the room, the furthest away from the door, and it just makes the room feel a little bit longer. So yes, you can bring in the muralist for that particular wall.
Mm-hmm.
You can also do wallpaper or the palette wood, which is so popular right
sure.
now. You just want to
create... just a solid paint color.
Right. You just want something that's going to draw the eye down the room.
Now, one last quick way to create that illusion of space is to simplify the furniture that you've got. You know, take the bed and use a very simple bed frame,
mm-hmm.
you know, something without a headboard.
Right.
It just appears to take up less space. Another great idea was to remove the bedside tables
mm-hmm.
and replace them with wall shelves.
Yes.
So you've still got that tabletop to work with, but all the space underneath is completely opened up.
Right. People think that minimal or non-existent decorating is the key to a small room, but it really isn't. It just makes it look so dull and boring. You can still use pictures and rugs and lighting and things like that. You just have to use less of them, and you have to get a little bit creative with how you use them.
And honestly, that's going to do it for the Repcolite Home Improvement Show for today. You can listen to this one and past episodes online at repcolite.com.
And if you have questions, you can email us at radio@repcolite.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and even YouTube. The links are all on our homepage, repcolite.com.
And speaking about Facebook, let's get to those winners. The five winners of the Affinity Fan Deck and the $25 gift certificate are Barbara Schrader Loy, Bob Green, Linda Seif Cooper, Lisa Eldred Schuel, and Brenda Biel, BYL. Those are the five winners. Thanks, everybody, for entering. We're going to have more contests coming up soon.
Absolutely.
And we'll be contacting the winners shortly to try to work out the best way to get them their prize.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Remember, if you're about to lose your DIY sanity, we can help you fix that crazy.
And make that tiny bedroom feel just a little bit bigger
than a place for ants.
Thanks for listening.